This is The Litter of Bones, a DCI Jack Logan thriller. Written by J.D. Kirk and produced by B. Heal. Episode 6. Logan stood in the foyer of the station, watching DC Nisha's car pull out of the car park. He caught a glimpse of Katrina Reed in the front passenger seat as the car turned onto the road, but then a streetlight reflected off the glass, hiding her, and the car rolled off into the night.
Didn't see that coming.
No, nor me. Should have, though.
Katrina Reed's story had seemed legitimate enough when she'd explained it. Growing up, she'd never known much about her father, other than the constant reminders from her mother that he was a no-good waster who'd had his wicked way, then cleared out at the first sign of a belly bump. She'd been trained to hate him by rote, and had always insisted to her then-fiancé, Duncan, that she had no interest in ever finding out where he was, what he was doing, or why he had turned his back on her all those years ago. And then, he'd found her through Facebook, and all that had gone out the window. She hadn't told anyone about their meetings. It would have killed her mother, and after her claiming complete disinterest in the man for years, Duncan wouldn't have understood. But she'd met him. She felt she should hear him out, and, more importantly, that he should hear her out. She had a lot of questions, and the opportunity to get some answers had been something she couldn't bring herself to pass up. To her surprise, he'd answered them all honestly. He'd messed up. He wasn't ready. He let her down. He'd thought about her every night for years, wondered where she was, what she was doing, all that stuff. To her amazement, she'd found herself warming to him. They'd arranged to meet again, and again, and again. Each time they did, she found herself enjoying his company more. He was funny, smart, kind, so far removed from everything her mother had told her. And then, out of nowhere, he'd stopped contacting her. All efforts to get in touch with him had failed. He'd vanished. He'd left her, all over again, and she hadn't even got a chance to tell him he was going to be a grandfather. 8 years later, he turned up. He contacted her online, explained he'd been in prison. She'd resisted at first, but it had been her who had eventually suggested the house next door. Although, to be fair, she'd expected him to rent it, not just move himself in.
But he didn't take Connor,
Katrina had insisted when Logan had suggested it.
I went round there on Friday night. I asked him. I even searched the place. He didn't know anything. I could tell. He didn't know anything about it.
Logan turned from the window, yawning. His eyes went to the clock on the wall. After one. Jesus, when did that happen?
Still think Walker took him, sir?
I wish I did. Be easy then.
Where are we if it wasn't him?
Back to square one.
Caitlin clicked her tongue against the back of her teeth.
Aye, I was afraid you might say that.
We'll have to talk to Walker again, but it can wait until the morning. My instinct is that he's not the kidnapper, just a bloody idiot. Mind you, have the forensics boys been over the house in the boat yet?
They have, sir. Still waiting on the report.
She looked at the clock, then double-checked on her watch.
Probably be the morning now.
Aye, probably. You should get some sleep in the meantime. Not a lot we can do right now. Did you get a hotel sorted?
I did, sir. Premier Inn. You?
No, I'm fine.
There's an empty office upstairs. The CID guys sometimes use it if they're pulling an all-nighter. You should try to sleep.
Hmm? Oh, no.
You said yourself, sir. Not a lot we can do right now.
Thanks for your concern, Detective Sergeant. But I'm all right, honest.
Bollocks you are.
The voice crackled from a speaker above the reception desk. Officially, the station was shut down for the night, and there was nobody manning the counter. Even with the echo and slight hiss of static, Logan recognised the voice as that of Detective Inspector Ben Ford. He searched the corners of the room for a camera, then gazed up into its single eye.
I'm up and about, Jack. I'll keep a watch on things. You go get some rest.
Logan looked down at himself, and the dirt and blood that stained his clothes. Jesus, what must Katrina Reed have been thinking? It wouldn't hurt to get an hour or two, Logan supposed. It had been a long day, and it was going to happen all over again tomorrow, but with the potential to be much, much worse. There was certainly an argument to be made for getting some kip.
Right. Well, just make sure.
I don't worry. I'll wake you if anything happens. Now go! You're no use to anyone if you're dead on your feet.
Logan nodded reluctantly, then turned to D.S. Macquarie.
Back here at 8, all right?
Yes, sir. See you then.
Aye, see you then. Oh, and Caitlin?
Yes, sir?
Bring some more of them caramel wafers when you're coming back in.
Caitlin smiled grimly.
Yes, sir. I'll see what I can do.
There was a baton in his hand. Cool. Rigid. Logan couldn't see it exactly, but he could sense it. He knew it was there. Poised. Ready. Useless. The door to the flat was locked, like always. No time for formalities. Never any time to waste. It flew open with a kick. Flew away, maybe. And a rush of warm, putrid air rushed past him like the breath of a dragon. Or the contents of Pandora's box. He was inside the flat now. The smell wrapped around him. Its flickering fingers of green the only visible thing in the otherwise empty void. He could feel it, hear it, taste it all around him. The mulchy stink of rot and decay and of things long dead. His grip tightened on the baton. From the darkness, he heard a voice. Two voices. Three. Boys. Children. Victims. They clawed at him, tearing at his skin with their scratchy sobs, exposing the flesh beneath.
Why do you say that? Why didn't you come? Why?
The scene shifted. Elsewhere in the flat now. Lights on, stench stronger than ever. A cupboard, a door, a hand reaching for a handle. His hand, he thought, although he wasn't in control of it. He was a passenger, an observer, a bystander, nothing more. The handle turned. The door opened. Three dead boys cried somewhere behind him. And from the cupboard came the nightmares. From the cupboard came the sorrow. From the cupboard came the bones. There was a face hanging over him, looking down. Logan had it by the throat before he was fully awake, forcing it back from him, keeping it at bay. His brain caught up a moment later, and quickly persuaded his hand to release its grip.
Shite! Sorry! Sorry!
Wincing and raising his hands in a gesture of surrender.
You all right?
My fault,
said Sinead, rubbing her throat just above the collar of her uniform.
I shouldn't have startled you. You weren't waking up.
No. Wasn't your fault. It was absolutely...
He blinked in the glow of the sunlight streaming through the blinds.
Wait, what time is it?
Just after 8, sir.
8? In the morning? Jesus. Why did no one wake me?
Maybe worried about being throttled, sir.
Aye. That might be it. Sorry again. But Jesus Christ. 8.
Chief Inspector Pickering said you wanted to see me. I reported in and D.I. Ford told me to come wake you.
Right. Good. What else did Jinkies tell you?
Not a lot, sir. Just that you wanted to see me.
It pleased Logan immensely to know that the rank and file were fully up to speed on Pickering's nickname. There hadn't been so much as a flicker of confusion on Sinead's face either, suggesting the name was old news to her. Excellent.
Did I do something wrong?
No. Nothing like that. The opposite, actually.
He started to stretch, but then caught a whiff of his armpit and hastily aborted.
You did good. I want you working with the MIT on this. You've got local knowledge, and you seem to know your stuff.
Sinead looked flabbergasted, but it only lasted a moment. She'd processed the shock quickly, and was now moving on. Always a good sign.
Thank you, sir. I don't know what to say. I won't let you down.
I'm sure you won't, Constable.
He yawned into his hand, then gave himself a shake.
Now let's go talk to D.I. Ford and find out the latest.
Sinead looked him up and down in one swift flick of the eyes.
You think you should maybe...
she began. Then she pointed over her shoulder.
I think there's some spare shirts next door.
Logan regarded his own shirt. It had been in a pretty shocking state the night before, and a few hours spent tossing and turning in an office chair hadn't done it any favours.
Aye, good call. And if you happen to stumble upon a can of deodorant anywhere, I wouldn't say no.
Sleeping Beauty awakes,
said Ben, grinning at Logan as he and PC Bell entered the incident room.
I was starting to think you'd died up there.
Aye, you wish,
Logan replied, fastened his tie and adjusting it as best he could by touch alone. Ben gave a tut, then stepped in and fixed it properly, before straightening the DCI's collar.
I'll be wiping your ass for you next.
Again, you wish.
Ben's nostrils flared, his face becoming a mask of revulsion as he looked Logan up and down.
No, I don't actually know why I said that. Sorry, probably best we don't ever speak of it again.
Aye, you wish. That'll be gone in the staff newsletter.
He motioned vaguely in the direction of the reception.
Tyler's bringing bacon rolls in for us. He should be back in a few...
The door opened, and DC Niche almost walked straight into the back of Sinead.
Oh, sorry. Didn't see you there.
You're all right.
Tyler,
said the DC, repositioning his stash of white paper bags until he had a hand free. He offered it to Sinead.
I mean, Detective Constable Tyler Niche.
Sinead. Bell. Sinead Bell.
Nice to meet you.
Sinead smiled back at him, then stepped aside when Logan thrust a hand out in the DC's direction, palm open.
Hurry up, I'm famished here.
What you on for, boss? Bacon, square sausage?
I don't care.
Tyler selected a bag at random and deposited it in the DCI's hand like an offering to the gods.
Thank you.
Anytime, boss.
While Logan stalked off to his desk, Tyler flashed Sinead an apologetic smile.
Sorry, I didn't know anyone else would be here. You can have mine if you like.
I'm fine, Ta. I ate this morning.
Oh, thank Christ,
said Tyler, visibly relieved. He continued past her, opening one of the bags and peering inside.
Hamza, cheese salad roll, you freak.
Hamza, who'd been staring intently at the monitor of his PC, meerkatted up from behind it at the mention of his name.
Shut it, you dick,
he said, placing his hands together and opening them for a pass. He caught the bag, winked theatrically to celebrate his catching prowess, then diverted his attention back to the screen.
Detective Sergeant Macquarie, bacon, link or square sausage?
Caitlin seemed to wrestle with her conscience for a few seconds, then held a hand out.
I'll take the link then, if no one else wants it.
I'm no fussed,
said Tyler, passing over another bag.
Whatever's going for me.
Right you are, sir.
Just not the square sausage.
Tyler hesitated for a moment, then swapped bags.
Sorted. Bacon it is.
Sinead shifted awkwardly, watching the others settle down to eat.
Should I make tea or something?
Logan forced down a lump of his dry roll. The bacon was so crispy it could cut glass, and he was pretty sure it lacerated his throat on the way down.
You're not here to make tea, Constable. You're a valued and respected part of this team, no a skivvy,
the DCI told her. He gestured with a half-eaten roll.
Tyler can make the tea.
What? I got the rolls.
Sinead backed towards the door.
It's not a problem. You're all eaten. I don't mind. Might as well make myself useful.
I can think of a few ways she can make herself useful,
Tyler muttered, when Sinead had left. A lump of diamond-hard bacon pinged off the side of his head.
Ow!
DC Niche, If I ever hear you speaking like that again about one of my officers, or anyone else for that matter, then we're going to have a big problem. Is that clear?
No, I didn't mean...
Tyler began to protest, but there wasn't really anywhere for him to go with it.
She seems nice, is all I was saying.
That wasn't what you were saying, but you're right, she is. Hence why you're not going to be allowed to go anywhere near her.
He addressed the rest of the group.
If anyone else hears D.S. Niche making similar comments again, or witnesses him attempting to ingratiate himself with Constable Bell, you all have my permission to kick the living shite out of him. Everyone clear?
The responses were all far too enthusiastic for Tyler's liking.
It's not what I meant,
he mumbled. Then he filled his mouth with a big bite of roll to stop himself getting into any more trouble. The rolls were polished off. The tea arrived. Introductions were made. And then began the process of getting everyone, Sinead in particular, up to speed. As all this was taking place, D.S. Macquarie worked her magic with a big board, scribbling notes on post-its and sticking them in place, connecting Walker and Katrina Reid with another length of red wool, and generally reorganising things based on what they now knew.
You're good at that,
said DC Callett, watching her over the top of his computer.
We sent her on a course.
2 days of sticking things to a wall. Taxpayers' money, well spent.
It wasn't just sticking things to a wall, sir. I mean, aye, it was mostly that, but they gave us lunch too.
Once the big board had been fully updated, Logan and the others took a few moments to study it. There was more information on it this morning than there had been the night before. No question about that. It was just that Logan had his doubts as to whether any of the information was useful, or if the board was essentially just a collage of meaningless bullshit that told them very little.
Preliminary forensics on Walker's house and the boat came in around 7:30.
Anything?
Not a sausage. Nothing to suggest Connor was anywhere near the place.
What about the loft? Walker was pretty insistent that he hadn't been up there.
Nothing back on that yet. I'll get them chased up.
They'll give us it when they have it,
Logan said, taking a sip of his tea. He considered Walker's mugshot over the rim of his cup.
I hate to say it, but I don't think it was him.
The loft?
Any of it. Duncan Reed said the work in the loft was done before Walker moved in. Could have been someone else.
Walker's our best lead at the minute.
Best? He's our only bloody lead. But I still don't think it was him. It doesn't make sense. I don't think he knew about the teddy bear. And I can't figure out how he'd know about what was written on the envelope in the original case.
He had been inside. Some of the lags talking, maybe.
Unless he was locked up with Owen Petrie and Carstairs, nobody should have known about that envelope.
His eyes glazed over a little, a memory taking over.
And the way it was laid out. The spacing or whatever. It was spot on. I mean, like, spot on. He couldn't have heard about it. He'd have to have seen it. And how could he have seen it?
The others had to admit that they had no idea.
Well, keep him in for now. We've got a few hours left before we have to decide if we're going to charge him.
We'll be charging him for the head injury, I assume. If nothing else.
Logan appeared momentarily surprised, then brushed his fingertips across the neat stitches.
No, aye, maybe. We'll see if we need an excuse to hold on to him.
A silence fell over the instant room as they all went back to studying the big board. Sinead stood at the rear of the group, her arms wrapped across her middle. She wasn't quite sure what she was meant to be looking at exactly, but she was looking damn hard at it, regardless. It was Tyler who eventually asked the question most of them were thinking.
So, if Walker doesn't have the kid, who does?
Not important,
said Logan. He finished his tea and set the mug down on his desk with a thunk.
Sir?
The who can wait. It's the where we need to worry about. If the kidnapper is determined to replicate the Petrie case, and he's been doing a bang-up job of it so far, then Connor has less than 24 hours left.
Logan looked across their faces.
I'll say that again. Connor Reed has less than 24 hours left to live, unless we get our fingers out and find him.
He gave that some time to sink in, but not much. They couldn't spare much.
So does anyone have anything? Anything at all?
Email in from forensics, guys,
said Hamza, as his computer gave a ping.
They're loading everything they've got so far onto Holmes. We should start seeing it in 10 minutes.
That's something.
I might have something else too, sir, but it's a stretch.
I'd rather be stretching than sitting here scratching my arse. What is it?
He gave Hamza a quick once-over, noting the slightly rumbled appearance and the fact he was wearing the same clothes as yesterday.
Have you been at it all night?
Aye, sir. Fell doing a bit of a rabbit hole with a lead.
Hamza took a Sharpie from the pen pot on his desk and approached the big board.
You know, I said I had a long shot I wanted to look into. It might be something.
He studied the map for a moment, then drew a circle around a spot about 3 miles north of where Connor Reed went missing. At first glance, there was nothing in the circle but trees and a section of track. It was only as Logan looked closer that he saw a tiny black rectangle there, slap bang in the middle.
What's that? A house?
Aye, well, kind of, sir. It was a croft. Ravenwood, it's called. Derelict now, from what I can tell on Google Maps, but no one living there for decades. There's a few places like this dotted all over the area, so I thought I'd hear a check out of the land registry and see if any of them were interesting.
And this one was?
It was, sir, aye. It changed hands about 22 years ago. Current owner, some Indian company who probably just bought it for the land, but never did anything with it.
You and me have a very different definition of interesting, mate.
He grinned at Sinead, started to wink, then caught the daggers Logan was shooting in his direction and turned his attention back to Hamza.
That's nae the interesting bit. It's a previous owner's limited company, shell company basically, but one of the directors of that company was another limited company.
Something tickled down the length of Logan's neck. Somehow, he knew. Even before Hamza said the words, he knew.
Petrie Construction.
DC Khaled tapped his pen against the little black rectangle.
Owen Petrie used to own that house.
He hadn't known. How could he not have known? Years back, Logan had combed through every file, every document, every damn scrap of paper connected to Owen Petrie, building the case that would keep him inside for the rest of his life. He'd had access to bank accounts, tax returns, bloody primary school reports. He'd turned the man's whole life inside out and upside down and compiled a report on everything he'd found. For a while, he could recite Petrie's assets from memory, including those of his construction company. There was a point when he could have told the court how many teaspoons a bastard owned, and fairly accurately described their condition. But he had a house. Another house, tucked away in the Highlands. And Logan had known nothing about it.
When was he there?
Hard to say, sir. Not sure he was ever actually there. Looks like it was bought by the company with a view to developing, but it never happened. But the company owned it between...
He consulted a post-it note he'd left stuck to his computer monitor.
1992 and 2001.
Jesus Christ!
He stepped in closer to the map and stared intently at the black rectangle, like he could somehow see through the roof and into the building below.
Dylan Muir.
What's that, Jack?
Logan tore his eyes from the map and turned.
Dylan Muir went missing in 1999. The bodies of Petrie's other victims were found in or around properties he owned. We never found Dylan. We found his clothes, and Petrie admitted to killing him, but he never told us where to find the body.
Isn't he brain damaged now, though, sir?
Allegedly, aye.
You think Connor could be being held there now?
Connor? No, that wouldn't make any sense.
He looked across their faces.
Petrie didn't do this. You do understand that, yes? Petrie's not involved.
Is it possible that Petrie wasn't responsible for...
Sinead began. Then an urgent shake of D.I. Ford's head cut her off before she could finish. The warning came too late, however. Logan's face darkened.
No, Constable. It's not possible that he wasn't responsible for killing those boys. I know, because I was there. I saw what he'd done, all right? Owen Petrie is guilty, and Owen Petrie is safely under lock and key 150 miles away.
Right, sir. Sorry, sir.
Sinead said, her cheeks burning. D.S. Macquarie caught her eye and offered a reassuring smile, or possibly one of condolences.
Do I think we'll find Connor Reed at that house?
Asked Logan, addressing the room as a whole.
No. No, I don't. Of course not. Do I think we'll find Dylan Muir?
He glanced back over his shoulder at the map.
Aye, maybe.
I'd like to go and check it out, sir.
You need to get to your bed. You've done enough. That was good police work, Hamza. But this has waited 20 years. It can wait another few days.
Hamza gave a grateful nod.
Thanks, but I'd really like to see it through, sir. I could take a quick drive up that way on the way to the hotel. It'll only take 20 minutes.
Fine. Swing by and take a look, but don't go trampling around the place. We'll have to arrange a full search. Is there a ground radar team locally?
Logan shook his head.
What am I saying? Of course not. We'll have to get one brought in. Forensic archaeologists, too.
You want to take Tyler with you?
D.I. Ford asked Hamza.
No, we need him here. We can't spare the resources.
Could be dangerous, Jack.
You're at it too. Owen Petrie does not have Connor. He can't. Hamza, if you want to take a look, feel free. Just be careful. Phone in when you're done. Then go get some rest.
Will do, sir. Thank you.
You might want to go out the side door, mate.
Eh? How come?
You mean you don't know?
Know what?
Tyler looked from Hamza to the DCI and back again.
You haven't been outside?
The penny dropped for DCI Logan.
Oh, bollocks. Press!
Aye, sir. You can say that again.
Logan and Ben Ford stood at an upstairs window, gazing down at the scrum below. Four uniforms were in the process of trying to corral 22 parasitic bastards into a makeshift holding pen they'd put together using a couple of plastic barriers they'd borrowed from the building site across the road. The journos were firing out questions. Logan couldn't hear them, but he could guess the sort of thing. Wildly insensitive, massively speculative, and occasionally stomach-turning. The officers down there almost certainly hadn't had to deal with this sort of thing before. But from what Logan could tell, they were handling it admirably, with just the right balance of politeness and utter contempt. Ben eyed the crowd of reporters. He didn't despise them to the extent that Logan did, but then he didn't have as many reasons to. They all pushed forward behind the barriers, arms stretching, mouths moving, a zombie horde.
You'll have to give them something.
A bloody good hiding would be my preferred option.
He scanned the crowd, expecting to see Ken Henderson somewhere near the front. But no, for once, Henderson wasn't in amongst it. Small mercies, Logan thought. Although, if Henderson wasn't making an arsehole of himself here, that just meant he would be making an arsehole of himself somewhere else.
We should get on to the liaison. Check the reeds are all right. If this lot are here, it'll be worse over there.
Ben nodded his agreement.
I'll get someone on that.
He took a breath, then shot the DCI a sideways look.
You seen the headlines yet?
No, but I can guess. Mr. Whisper returns, is it?
Pretty much, aye. Just the Scottish papers for now, but a couple of the UK wides have put it on their websites. The Gozer's coming up the road to handle the press conference later today. Caitlin's preparing a report for him now.
The Gozer? How come he's coming up? I thought someone from up north would handle it.
Assistant Chief Constable's request, apparently. She's very keen he should do it. Can't imagine he's thrilled at the prospect.
You can say that again. Suits me, though. Means I don't have to talk to this lot.
He cast a look to the mostly clear blue sky inside.
The one day you want it to be raining.
Aye. Where's a bloody great downpour when you really need one?
Ben agreed. There was a knock at the door. It opened without waiting to be told, and DC Niche appeared in the doorway.
Boss?
He said, although it wasn't clear which of them he was directly addressing.
Update on Holmes.
Tyler gave a backwards tilt of his head, indicating for the other two men to follow.
I think we've got something.
Logan stood by Tyler's desk, face to face with a mugshot on the computer screen. He was an ugly bugger, whoever he was. Scrawny, dirty, and with all the hallmarks of a long-standing heroin habit. One side of his face drooped like he'd had a stroke, and his mouth was a graveyard of worn brown stumps.
Who am I looking at?
He's...
Tyler began, but then he stepped aside, a motion to PC Bell like a compere welcoming a new act to the stage.
Forbes Bamber, sir. Local scroat. Harmless enough, but got a string of shoplifting charges and various drugs-related stuff. He's a pain in the arse, but I wouldn't peg him for something like this.
Then why have we? What's come up?
Fingerprint. From the envelope that was delivered with the teddies to the Reeds.
Now you're talking. Delivery man, maybe. He might be able to ID whoever gave it to him.
I wouldn't hold my breath, sir. He's usually pretty wasted.
Well, here's hoping.
He turned back to DC Niche.
Anything else come through?
Tyler alt-tabbed to another window on his desktop.
Nothing yet, sir. Shouldn't be long.
Okay, fine. Go back to the junkie.
Tyler clicked the mouse. Bamber's face flashed up like a prop in a ghost train.
You've dealt with him before?
Logan asked Sinead.
God's eye, we all have. No saying he'll remember me, though.
Well, let's go see if we can jog his memory,
Logan said, grabbing his coat.
Tyler, keep an eye on Holmes. If anything new comes in, text me.
Gotcha, boss.
Pulling on his coat, Logan took a look around the incident room. D.S. Macquarie was typing up the report for the Gozer, her fingers darting impressively across the keys in stark contrast to Logan's usual single-digit prodding.
Hamza left.
Aye, he's going to swing by that croft and go get some kip. We've to phone him if we need him.
He'll check in, though, aye?
Aye, once he's had a look, he's going to give us a ring and let us know he's clear.
Good, right. Then I'll leave everything in your capable hands.
He turned to Sinead.
My car's out front, and I don't fancy walking past that shower of bastards. Am I right in thinking all the police vehicles are out back?
Yes, sir.
Good. We'll take one of those. You can drive.
Logan stood in front of D.I. Ford and held his hands out at his sides.
Tidy enough.
Ben flicked a crumb from the DCI's lapel.
I suppose you'll do.
Right then.
His coat swished behind him as he turned and stalked towards the door.
Let's go pay Mr. Bamber a visit.
Bloody hell.
Hamza muttered as a front tire hit another pothole, bouncing his car violently around on the narrow track. He was crawling along, but the holes were too frequent to avoid, and deep enough that there wasn't much he could do when he hit one except grit his teeth, grip the wheel, and try not to bite off his tongue. His phone was mounted in its holder on the dashboard, Google Maps open and tracking him, or trying to track him at least. It was currently accusing him of being several hundred yards away from the closest road, and seemed to be under the impression that he was driving through a stream. Occasionally, the little triangle representing his car would randomly teleport to another location nearby, spin in clueless circles for a few seconds, then snap back to its original position. The phone signal was patchy, and the upcoming section of map hadn't downloaded. As a result, Hamza was about to drive into a perfectly square beige-coloured void, with no idea what awaited him. So much for bloody technology. He was reaching into the glove box for the map when a sheep launched a kamikaze run. It bounded out onto the track directly ahead of him, bleating furiously and stamping its feet like some self-appointed guardian of sweet fuck all. Hamza hammered the brake, churning up the shale beneath the car's wheels. He cursed as the back end spun into a skid, all his police driving training going completely out the window as he wrestled frantically with the wheel. The car thumped into another pothole. The sudden stop threw Hamza forward in the seat and sent his phone clattering into the passenger footwell. Hamza took a moment to check nothing was broken, then looked out over the dash. The sheep glowered in at him with its big, boggly eyes. It gave an accusing "Bah!" then trotted across the track, up the banking, and into the trees that lined the left-hand side.
"Thanks for that,"
Hamza called after it. Then, with a tut, he unfolded the map, glanced around him, and tried to figure out where he was supposed to be going. Forbes Bamber swayed in the doorway of his house, scowling out at the morning sunshine, and the two police officers standing on his step. His eyes were taking it in turn to blink, like they'd fallen out of sync at some point, and had never been able to get their timing right since. If you were being generous, you might describe Bamber's house as a detached two-bedroom. That was, on a strictly technical level, correct. In reality, it was a hideous concrete cube, not much bigger than a shoebox, with barely an ant's pube-width gap between it and the two identikit hovels on either side. A good estate agent could also argue that it had a garden, although they'd gloss over the fact it was 8 feet long, made of broken bricks and rubble, and covered in dog shit. Bamber stood in what might generously be described as a porch. There had presumably been an internal door hanging in the frame behind him once. The holes in the wood suggested the presence of hinges at some point, but it had been removed. The sound of a child screaming came through the opening. It wasn't a scream of pain or fear, but rather one of those high-pitched screeches some kids like to do for the sole purpose of being annoying. Judging by the hollered,
"Fucking shut up!"
the screams earned from a female voice further back in the house, it was proving to be a successful strategy.
"You can't come in,"
Bamber said. His voice was a slur that dribbled through his rotten teeth and down onto the front of a filthy T-shirt that was big enough to drown in. A faded print on the front of the T-shirt showed a grinning blue cartoon character with a white hat and glasses. "Irony," thought Logan, "thy name is Brainy Smurf." Other than the T-shirt, Bamber was dressed in mismatched socks and faded grey boxer shorts that Logan didn't even want to think about.
"We don't want to come in."
This was true. The last thing Logan wanted was to set foot inside this house.
"You need a, what you call it, to come in. The people hang."
"A warrant. Well, we do and we don't."
"Again, though, we don't want to come in."
"Warrant, aye,"
mumbled Bamber, his brain slowly catching up.
"Have you got one of them?"
"No, we don't have a warrant."
"'Cause if you don't, you're no getting in."
Bamber pointed to the ground.
"That's my garden."
Logan twitched, irritated.
"What?"
"It's my garden. It's my property, Nat. You're no allowed on my property."
"Well, we are."
"No, you're no. I'll call the police."
Sinead shot Logan a glance.
"We are the police, Forby. That's why I'm dressed like this."
Bamber leaned back and peered down his nose at her, as if just noticing her outfit for the first time.
"Seriously? You're the police!
Aye.
He wiped his nose on his bare arm, leaving a silvery trail along it, and briefly revealing the crook of his elbow that was a pincushion of red dots and bruising.
If you're the police, you need one of them hangs before you can get in. What's it called? You shouldn't even be in my garden.
Logan had had enough. Bamber yelped as one of the DCI's hands clamped down on top of his head and tore him out of the house. Logan marched along the path, dragging Bamber by the hair.
Oi! Fuck off! You can't do this!
Logan opened the gate, pulled the struggling scroat through it, and slammed him hard against the outside of his fence.
There now, we're not on your property.
Ignoring the potential health risks, he was right up in Bamber's face, a hand still clamped on his head.
Now, Forby, I've got some questions for you. Are you going to help me out by answering them?
Logan tightened his grip on Bamber's hair, drawing a sob through those rotten tooth stumps.
Or am I going to get to do this the hard way?
Hamza sat in his car, his eyes flitting from the map sprawled open across the steering wheel to the ramshackle house that slouched in the trees ahead of him. It was bigger than he'd been expecting, more of a manor house than a croft. The forest had been working to claim the ground back for a while now, and a tree was growing out through one of the building's downstairs windows. Like the rest of them, this window had been boarded over, but the tree had made short work of that. And the square of plyboard now lay rotten on the ground in front of the house.
Is this it?
Hamza wondered aloud. He fished around in the footwell until he found his phone and checked Google Maps. He had one bar of phone signal, but no data connection. According to Google, he was right in the middle of a desert with nothing of note for miles in any direction. It wasn't too far off the mark, he supposed. With nothing to tell him from this distance if he was in the right place, Hamza refolded the map, tossed it onto the passenger seat, then got out of the car. Birds chirped and tweeted and hoo-hooed from the treetops, singing to him as he turned towards the house. He locked the car, more out of habit than any worry that someone might try to nick it out here. Unless the squirrels were crafty bastards, he was pretty sure he didn't have to worry about that. The forest had closed in around the back of the house, making it almost completely inaccessible. The front was mostly mud, stones and weeds, with the track Hamza had followed leading off past the building to the left. If the map was right, it came to a stop half a mile or so further on, becoming just a footpath that eventually led in a wide loop around to the main road half a day's walk away. Picking his way through the mud and avoiding the gloopy brown puddles as best he could, Hamza approached the house. A nagging voice still told him that this couldn't be the place, although the only thing he had to base that on was the mental picture he had of traditional croft houses. He had no idea where that mental picture had originally come from, though. For all he knew, all croft houses were two-story mini-mansions. It was only when he saw the sign above the front door that he concluded he was in the right place. A smooth piece of wood had been fixed above the lintel, a single word carved studiously but inexpertly into its well-sanded surface. Moss and time had stained the edges of the letters, but Hamza was able to make the word out.
Ravenwood.
This was the place, all right. The door, unlike the windows, wasn't boarded up. Hamza tried the handle. Locked. The wood had seen better days, though. One good shoulder would open it. But what would be the point? There was no one here. Or if they were, they'd been dead a long, long time. With a final glance up at the house, Hamza headed back towards the car. He was barely halfway when he saw the imprint in the mud. It led from a little further down the track from where he'd left his car, curving towards the front of the house. Tire tracks. Motorbike. Recent. Hamza tapped the screen of his phone. The solitary bar had become an empty right-angled triangle in the top right corner.
Magic.
He stood rooted to the spot, halfway between the house and his car, tapping his phone against the side of his leg.
Bugger it, I've come this far,
he decided. And then slipping his phone in his pocket and adopting his best policeman's walk, DC Khaled approached the building's front door. This is A Litter of Bones, a DCI Jack Logan thriller, written by J.D. Kirk and produced by Be Here.